sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets oversold. Middle East conflict is escalating, and the cavalry saves the market on Friday. All this and much more on episode number 289 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, hello and an early happy Thanksgiving to you. We are in the throes of that vacation holiday season where markets are closed a couple of days here, a few days there. And we'll actually see markets closed, of course, at the end of this week for the observance of the Thanksgiving holiday, which means also that volume may be a little bit light into that because a lot of people do take this time to, you know, take off a little bit. But nonetheless, it is a time when we are still looking for opportunities in the markets. And we'll go over a lot of that today, name some specific names, come up with some favorites that may have been overdone and things that I like, as well as talk to you about all the things that are going on around the world that may affect your portfolio. Now, I want to make sure of something because I know a lot of people, they've been writing me, they've been saying, oh man, I'm kind of just discouraged with this market condition and it seems that, you know, I get in and things don't work out well. And here's the deal. No matter what the market condition throws at you, remember that is all part of a process. That doesn't mean that you'll be successful all the time. In fact, a lot of times you hear that if an investor is 50% or more successful with profits, that you can have a great, not only career, but also a great portfolio outcome. Now, there's something to be said about, you know, making sure that you have certain stops in and you have certain levels that you identify when it comes to the positions that you're holding. But at the same time, don't get discouraged. Because I'll tell you something, you know, you look at, for example, the month that we just had of November and maybe a little bit of October, you know, if you were on the wrong side of the market during that time, if you were maybe, let's say, really long and you were buying things and you're going crazy saying, hey, we're dropping towards a bottom right now and I'm going to buy, wow, you'd be really disappointed sitting there right now. But you know what? You have to find those important inflection points where you want to make your stand, where you want to buy, where you want to sell, where you want to short, where you want to double up, where you want to get out, etc. And, you know, clearly we could see this from, for example, when you look back and, you know, we have a record of all the trigger point research alerts that we sent out. November was not a good month. October, we hit, I think, close to 90, maybe 95% of the actual alerts that we sent out were profitable. Unfortunately, though, in November, I think our average is like 30%. But here's the point. The point is that it is not a single inning that you look at in a ball game. You look at the entire, you know, nine innings, or if it goes into overtime, you look at the entire process. How many times have you seen a basketball game, a football game, or whatever you watch, soccer maybe? You know, one team leads, then it comes back, goes back and forth. You have to stick to a plan that has worked over time. Clearly, if it's not working over time, it's another discussion. But if you're going to be an investor and involved in the markets, don't give up. Don't get discouraged. Keep on plowing ahead with what a good proven strategy is, whatever that may be. Because once you give up, you have no opportunity to get any profit moving forward. And you also have to remember something, that if you're going to be emotional about this, about making money, losing money, you know, being involved, being nervous, staying up late at night or not sleeping at all because you can't think of anything other than what's going to happen with the stock, the future, the commodity, you know, the bond that you own, then you're not going to be successful because your finger is going to be much too fast triggered, if you will, on the sell, the buy, the cover, the short button. So I just want to put that as a backdrop because markets have a tendency to change direction just when you least expect it. And one of the things that we have been putting up on the blog, we have been tweeting about, is the key reversal indicator, the KRI, we call it. Hopefully you've been following this. This is one of those indicators that we created to look at what we believe is truly the potential for an oversold or an overheated market. Now, there are other indicators out there. People use simple indicators like a stochastic or a MACD or an RSI to find where a market may be trending to a point that it is going to be bought because it's oversold or maybe sold because it's overbought. The problem with those are that you will oftentimes see a position or a market that stays oversold or stays overheated for a long time. The signal still shows it as a point that may be a buyable point, a time to switch from one direction, whether you're short or long, to the other. But unfortunately, they don't have a real good track record. So what we did was we came up with a combination of several different indicators that we have found to be very, very sharp, very, very accurate. And what we want to do is find stages of oversold or overbought, overheated we call it, or a market that's in equilibrium. Now, here's what's interesting about this. That when we did this recently, in other words, we set this up a long time, did some backtesting on this, took it through the motions and put some stress tests on it to see really how it reacts to different conditions. We want to make sure that it wasn't reacting too quickly, but yet not too slowly. Does that make sense? We want to make sure that there was a good amount of points where when you are in equilibrium, you may still be in a trend down or a trend up. But we want to see those points that things get really out of line. So what we did was we have a maximum of a -7 or a +7, looking at oversold or overheated. And what we do is we look at this on a daily basis, throughout the day and on a daily basis, to see where we are. Now, we hit a peak of a +7 back in September. And that was a time where we really rarely see such an incredibly high reading. Only a few times in the last, decade or so, we've seen a reading that high. And when it gets to that point, you have to start saying, wait a second, maybe there's too much optimism in the market. Maybe there's too much of a feeling that things are just never going to get worse. And you know what? Maybe I need to take some chips off the table or hedge my portfolio. Now, whether it's one day or the next day, I mean, you have to within a reasonable time period. Now, at the same time, we've only seen a -6, I think, once or twice in the last number of years. And recently, we hit a -4 on Thursday. We hit -5 Friday morning. I want you to think about the markets for a second. For a while, even though we were in a downtrend, markets were staying in a relative range of equilibrium, even though the downtrend persisted, meaning that the selling pressure and the amount of selling that was going on was not pushing it outside the norm of the range. Now, we saw that on Thursday we were, inching up on really levels that on the oversold level and the oversold comment that, hey, wait a minute, this is getting a little bit into buying territory. So on Thursday, we started actually take down some hedges, take down some short positions, and add long index exposure. On Friday, when we were ticking down even lower, we did it again. And lo and behold, the good news is that things reversed very hard on Friday, and we'll talk about why that was. But maybe it was because there was just a built-up sentiment that was so negative that any good news would actually move the market. And that's really the whole key here. It's all based on sentiment. Because when sentiment is so negative and so just, throwing everything out the window as fast as possible, selling off everything that you can because of panic, those are the times, oftentimes, where you see a quick reversal. Now, what we do is we don't say, well, this is just, hey, everything's going to go back to being an uptrend all of a sudden. No, what we do is we have about a 3 to 5 day period that we're going to actually hold those long index exposures. And then if markets become back in equilibrium, we'll take those off and then see what happens from there. Because when markets become back, move back to equilibrium, you still can continue the downtrend from there. But as you see markets popping and shorts covering and all of a sudden a little bit of optimism coming back, obviously sentiment changes and all of a sudden we go and go the other direction. And oftentimes we'll sneak up on the wrong side of it again way too quickly. So about a 3 to 5 day, maybe a little bit longer, a little bit shorter sometimes, depending on where you are, is the optimal time frame that we'll see all of a sudden a move in the opposite direction to create the level of equilibrium in the markets that we need to see to follow the trend that's moving, that's currently in force. And again, currently, right now, as we sit here, we are in a downtrend. So take a look at what we did was the KRI indicator. We actually put a weekly composite of it, and it's a gauge, so it kind of spins around. And we showed where the high was, where the low was, and actually animated the gauge so you can see what happened on a daily basis from mid-September through Friday. And that's over on the disciplinedinvestor.com site. I think it's really interesting to take a look at that. And why it's important is because you want to have, at all times, something that is not emotionally based. It's more based on mathematics. It's based on a good representation of what markets have done and how they've reacted in the past so that you don't get kind of caught up in that whole, well, it's going to go down and it looks like it's going down forever and I really can't invest right now. And, you know, again, you have to take the opposite side of the trend sometimes as a contra trend trade. So take a look at that. I think it was really cool how it actually worked out. We'll see what happens over the next week. And like I said, we have a shortened schedule because of holidays coming up. And I'm looking forward to it. One of my relatives, John, he makes something called a traducken, which is a duck stuffed inside of a chicken, stuffed inside of a turkey. And they cook it all together and they stuff it. And man, it's good because you get all the juices flowing around. And I don't know if you've ever had it before, if you ever heard of it before, but I would check it out if you hadn't ever heard of it. He also does some great turkey frying, but we're going to go over his house. He does a great job at cooking that all up, and I'm looking forward to a wonderful Thanksgiving, and I wish you and your family, by the way, the best of all things on this holiday, and hopefully you're getting together with your family and spending some quality time with them, some time off, watch some good football, have a good time, watch the parade. All right, let's talk about some other things that are important. One of the things that also sparked the rally, and again, you have to remember that we were coming from a pretty negative sentiment in markets because of the fiscal cliff and economic outlook in the Middle East and Asia and all the things that went into Europe. One of the things that sparked the rally was the comment by John Boehner when he came out of a meeting with President Obama and said that there was some constructive talk that went on. So all of a sudden, everybody thinks, wow, wait a minute. Wow, the fiscal cliff's going to be solved here. And boy, we're going to move past this whole thing. And there's great optimism. No longer are the Republicans going to kind of put the kibosh on things, and Obama and the Democrats are going to kind of go along with maybe, you know, kind of changing their position on entitlements, and the Republicans will say it's okay to do some higher taxes. And but all it was a comment. All it was, hey, we're kind of thinking about different ways to solve this problem. But let's get back to the basics of the fiscal cliff. The basic fact is that all of the tax benefits and relief that were put on during President Bush's time, where he was looking to put on a stimulus package for the economy, are going to automatically roll back January 1st. Now, let's first agree, maybe, at least I think this is the case, that never, again, can anybody put one of these BS, bogus tax deals together where they just postpone pain. Not a good idea. Spend a little more time focusing on what real fiscal solutions are and then come out with them rather than coming out with just some kind of deal where, you know, we say, okay, we're going to postpone the pain for 2, 3, 4 years and then you guys have to deal with it and clean up the mess after. That doesn't work. We saw that with the debt ceiling. Remember where there was going to be an agreement, but if it didn't, nobody came up with anything, then we're just going to roll back and it just doesn't work. Politicians are just stalling and dragging their feet because they cannot make anything happen. The Congress and the entire government right now is so dysfunctional, and there's no change really after the election. And that's why markets are timid, to say the least. But here's what I want to say. Two things. Number one, there's going to be a lot of talk over the next several weeks of the cavalry is coming, the Congress is coming to save the day, we're coming up with a solution, yada, yada, yada. The problem is that no matter what the solution is, will be a drag on GDP moving forward, at least for the first half, if not further along in 2013. The reason is that already we're at a point where companies have not been able to lay down a good foundation for their planning because we don't know what is going to be in store for them in terms of taxation, benefits, the change of the employee tax rates. There's a whole host of things that they just don't know. More importantly, that no matter what happens, there's going to be some additional revenue raised either from the wealthy or from the middle, wherever it comes from, and there's going to be cut to entitlements. The fact is that there needs to be some kind of a payback for the party that was had with lower taxes and with spending that went on over the last, I don't know, we'll say 4 to 6 years. The only way that happens is by taking money out of the economy through, again, taxes or reduced entitlements and benefits and paying it back. Whether it's a small amount, whether it's a large amount, whether it's a big hit, the worst would be if they don't do anything. Second worst would be if they do just a partial and make just some people pay and entitlements cut back slightly because it's going to go on for a much longer period of time. Just as bad, in my opinion, is just kicking the can down the road and just having sometime in the future them come back to this whole thing just to, once again, postpone the inevitable. Because what that will do was will continue the process of companies and individuals having no good foundation on how to plan. That's just stupid. I can't stress that enough. Uncertainty, inability to plan, the lack of any kind of understanding of what the future holds, that's just bad business. You can't do that to people and companies. Once you do that, you're asking for trouble. So the solution, whatever it may be, whether it's a compromise, whether it's not doing anything and postponing it, or whether it's some kind of anything other than a total retooling of the tax system and a total plan with a long-term nature of paying off the debt and putting the budget in order, absent of that, there's going to be a continuation of the slog of economic growth in the U.S. Now, whether we go quote unquote over the cliff and have a 5% drag immediately in the first quarter or second quarter of GDP according to the CBO, or we just nick it by 2% here, 2% there. But the problem is we're only getting about a 2% GDP growth rate at this point anyway. So now you go down to zero. With Japan heading into a recession again, Europe clearly in a recession and getting deeper. That's the last thing that we need, is the U.S. sinking into a recession. So during the time that we have all the discussion that's going to happen, you know, all these Congress people and the senators grabbing the microphone to say they have a plan and something looks better, I want you to realize that markets are going to be choppy. There is a inherent hope trade going into the end of the year, and that's natural. You know, Santa Claus rally, and we're overdone, and you know, look at the stock, it'd been sold too much, and all these things that go on into the discussion. But then you have the media going to focus on this, so you're going to see a lot of chop throughout the rest of the year, as I see it. Don't get discouraged. Realize that it is something that's going to happen, and use it to your advantage. That's what I want you to do. We'll do our best to keep on publishing the KRI indicator, just so you can get an example of where things are. But right now, we're still about a -4 oversold, even after Friday's move, which was quite incredible, actually, if you look at it. The NASDAQ 100 was down about, well, actually, Apple was down about almost 4%. NASDAQ was down 1% or so. It came back and roared from the bottom at 1.8%. In other words, from the bottom to the top, about 1.8% in a matter of about an hour when Boehner came out and made that announcement. That's pretty impressive. Pretty impressive. That was a lot of short covering, of course. There's a lot of weekend covering into you know, what's going to happen over the weekend. Is there going to be a ceasefire in the Middle East? Is, you know, what's happening there? But the fact is that it was an impressive bounce. Now, I want to talk about Apple. I want to talk about the NASDAQ 100, Hostess Brands I want to talk about. Before I do that, though, I want to mention GoToMeeting, because this is a great time of year to think about this. You know, you have relatives all around the world, and you have colleagues that just are kind of buckling down. They don't want to really take a lot of trips towards the end of the year. You have businesses that are in one place or the other, but GoToMeeting makes all that so easy. It really does, because you have this GoToMeeting with HD faces. You have video. You have just the ability to collaborate, share, see pictures, see people, and do it for 30 days for free. GoToMeeting, you can do it on your iPad. You could use it there. You can feel connected right away, and just awesome technology to better your life. You can get a 30-day free trial of GoToMeeting. Just go to GoToMeeting.com, click the Try It Free button there, and use the promo code PODCAST. Be sure to use the promo code PODCAST, and you can get 30 days of free GoToMeeting. And this is a great time of year to try it if you haven't done so before. We use it for meetings, for collaboration, for talking with people, for sharing ideas, sharing information. And it's just one of those great things that you really got to check out. GoToMeeting.com. Try it free. Now, I promise we talk about Apple. What's going on with Apple? I mean, since the iPhone 5 announcement, man, it's been just a disaster, that stock. Matter of fact, on Friday, it looks like it was just going to crack 500, hit a low about 506 or so. We actually bought more shares at the 508 range, $508 range, seeming that there was just a little bit of something going on. Now, there's been some talk about that several hedge funds who margined up on Apple were forced to sell out. And that would kind of make sense. If you think about the amount that Apple went down, you had the bad trade by Rockdale, you had them having to deleverage that. You maybe have some people selling off at the high. You maybe have some market sell-off in general, which causes Apple to go down. And then you have hedge funds that are forced to sell. And that makes sense for the amount of move that Apple had, considering all the things that are going well with Apple. So Apple also, if you think about it, makes up about 20%, or did, of the NASDAQ 100. Talking about a 20% drop in Apple, plus more than 20%. You're talking about a 5% drop just from Apple itself in the NASDAQ 100 index, and not to mention Google and all the other ones that are in there that are really causing some pain to that index. It would seem to me that that's a place you want to look for some bargains right now. The NASDAQ 100, again, very heavily weighted towards the top 10, about 56%. Of the NASDAQ 100 is weighted to the top 10 positions. It is market cap weighted. And Apple right now is about 18.5%. So if you like Apple and you like some of the mega caps, you should check this out. And we wrote a post that's going up, I think Tuesday. No, it's Monday. Excuse me. Monday is going up about the NASDAQ 100, the weightings, what the returns have been weekly, monthly, of the individual components and how much they really took the hit or put the hit on the NASDAQ 100 index. Something I want you to look at, because if there's going to be a bounce here from an oversold position, as we talk about, the NASDAQ 100, you could buy that through an ETF, QQQ. You could buy the futures. You could buy the components. This is an area that I would look at, because that's the first one. If there is an investment appetite that comes back, I think that you're going to see a lot of that going towards the big names. Now, one of the things that you're also seeing is a rotation in the market lately. So they rotated out of some of the big names. They rotated out of the energy stocks. They clearly, man, the utility index, have you seen that? You know, we're talking about an index that really has, I would say, generally in the past, relatively little risk. It has a high dividend. But between the storms in the Northeast and the fact that now dividends are possibly going to be hit upon because the tax increase will hit dividends as ordinary income, people are saying, wait a minute, what do I need this for? That's, again, why you're seeing a lot of companies push through special dividends towards the end of the year. Because why pay the higher dividend tax, especially if you're a major owner of shares of the company? Why not take the dividend out this year and pay a much lower tax on it than hold it in the company and be taxed at a higher rate next year. Think about that. Now, energy drink, let's kind of, I got a lot of things I want to talk about. The energy drink market. Man, have you seen the news lately? It started with Monster Beverage, right? It started with the fact that there were some claims that maybe there were people that were drinking this that had adverse effects from it. Then it was Contra about it, talking about, well, you know, the fact is that not really. It may have been just the caffeine, and there's not that much caffeine, and compared to Starbucks coffee, blah, blah. All this went swirling around. Monster got smacked pretty hard. In fact, their earnings came out pretty light, and that could have been because of all the news surrounding the potential health hazard of the drink itself. Now we're starting to hear reports that there have been a lot of cases of some kind of negative impact on people from Red Bull, Redline, and all these other five-hour energy drink deal. All this stuff is starting to bubble up to the top now. Now, what happens here is two things. First of all, there's going to probably be a pretty significant short hit on Monster Beverage and all the drink companies that maybe distribute that. Coca-Cola is one of the big distributors of some of these beverages. The reason is that individuals may stay away from these. And there may be a bit of a buyer strike when it comes to the product. That will be reflective in the price of the shares in the next several quarters. So I want you to take a look at some of this, the news that's coming out, the potential FDA investigation into this, and think about Monster Beverage as one of the, you know, one of the companies that may get hit here. I want you to think about that. On another company note, the 3D Systems, there's a couple of different companies out there that do this 3D printing thing. If you haven't seen it, it's pretty interesting. It does kind of a fabrication of something. It could be a screw or a nut. It could be a little doll. Right now, it's in its infancy, this whole 3D printing. But it's something that has really been exciting over the last several years to think about. And the companies that are in the leadership position, Stratasys and 3D Systems, have been really doing well in terms of their share price. Well, recently there was a Seeking Alpha article, which I don't know how much credit that gives and how much credibility they get, but I guess it did something. That 3D Systems has some financial accounting issues and they're not reporting correctly and the stock dropped pretty hard. I think it was down about 17% last week. Well, we bought a little bit of it because, you know, when you see these kind of things, especially from the players that are in the position to be shorting the shares and really collecting on that, you got to wonder from where it comes from. 3D Systems will be having an announcement this week and a conference call, and they've already discussed they're going to possibly be suing for defamation and all sorts of other things against the author of the article, because they find no truth whatsoever to this. Now, you know, where there's smoke, sometimes there's fire. You know, we have to look at that as well. But I got to tell you right now that if there is any kind of future in this technology, this is something interesting to look into. So I would take this right now with a grain of salt, but at the same time, potentially an opportunity to, you know, kind of get this at a much better price after they came out with great earnings last quarter, by the way. Just something to kind of nibble on. Don't get overly excited, because we need to see what the total fallout of this is. But I believe that usually what you'll see is when the company does come out with a very strong rebuttal and argument about their financials and showing that, you know, hey, we've been audited, here's all our numbers. You know, oftentimes you'll see a pretty significant bounce on that announcement. So that's something that you need to kind of look at and put into the equation here. So both companies are really interesting companies to look at from a fundamental standpoint, from a growth potential, and from a technology standpoint, which is kind of what you want in a package. Those are the things you really want. You want to have a new product. You want to have something that's kind of changing the way we do things. You want to have good financials. You want to have good earnings growth, good growth of sales, and all that. All that whole package that goes into a great potential stock of the future. These companies have it, but now they're being marred by this article. We'll see what happens, and I'll try to follow up on this. But if nothing else, put this on your watch list. It's symbol DDD, 3D Systems. And take a look at that and watch it and see how it reacts over the next couple of weeks after this earnings call or this rebuttal call comes up. On another company note, I want to explore something with you. I'm a little just disturbed. Seems to be something that I just don't understand the wisdom with this whole Hostess Bakery Twinkie deal. One of the things that we want to do is we want to get manufacturing back in the U.S. We've shipped out all our manufacturing to China for, you know, over the years, and now it's being even sent out to other countries throughout the world, and particularly in Asia. Cheap labor, they work well, you know, we can get it back cheaply, we can have better profit margins at the companies that do this, and, you know, the list goes on and on. Yet in the United States, companies can't compete. They can't compete with the cheap labor, the fact that we have to pay benefits, workman's comp, blah, 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 this whole, you know, the whole laundry list of pensions, of benefits, and possibly unions. All of this came to a head at Hostess Brands. Again, the fact that all these workers are striking, putting the company essentially out of business. Now, you may say, wait a minute, the company can do this. The fact of the matter is, if we are going to be competitive here in the United States, we have got to say, wait a second, what is it that we expect as employees? Do we have to have all this? Well, of course, people should be paid a fair wage. No question about that. But to a point to put the company out of business, the company says it's just not worthwhile anymore dealing with this. Blame the unions? Maybe. Blame the workers? Maybe. Blame the company? Maybe. But at the end of the day, look at what's happened. It's exactly what we don't want to happen. That there is so much pressure on the employers to pay such high benefits, high wage, and all the other things that go into the benefits package, that they can put a company out of business or cause a company to stop their manufacturing domestically and send it somewhere else. That in itself, this looks to me like what is wrong with American manufacturing. And whether you blame one side or the other in this particular case, but I'm talking this in a bigger picture. And the bigger picture is, if this is allowed to continue to go on, this kind of pressure by unions and pressure by employees on companies are just going to throw up their hands and say, you know, forget it. I'm not doing it. Because at the end of the day, it's net profit margin and net profits that will keep a company in business. Again, you may say, well, the fat cats at the leadership of the company and the board of directors and the management, they're making all the money at the expense. Okay, I got that. But companies need to be profitable. This is not a game that's to be played that everybody gets paid the same. The management gets paid more. The workers get paid less. It deals with the skill of the different skill sets of all that. And that's the way it is. But now all these people that worked at Hostess are going to be out of jobs. Did they want that? Is that what they really wanted? And do you think that if the Hostess brand and the entire product line is bought out by another company, I'm going to ask you something. Do you think they should hire back those employees that were striking and cause the company such major economic disruption, financial ruin, and had to have the company close its doors and sell off all its product line? Do you think that those employees deserve to be rehired back? What's probably going to happen is a company without the unions and the excess benefits and all that are going to hire people that are willing to take the job at a lower pay. And now all of a sudden you have all these people that had a long time at the Hostess Bakery, at management, at, you know, working the line, working in accounting and finance. All the different people are out of jobs. I'm not sure where the benefit is here. And it also ripples through the entire economy saying, hey, wait a minute. If we're going to have to struggle with workers like this over time, and we're going to have to be in a situation where our back is up against a wall and profitability is thrown out the window because we just can't afford it anymore, why even bother with this whole discussion of keep America's manufacturing strong? I mean, it sounds great. It's a fantasy. If we don't level the playing field somehow, and that means a give and take by workers, management, companies in general, and benefits that we have as a country in terms of our products themselves versus others. Not saying protectionism is what we want, but, you know, a little favoritism, then what's the point? Manufacturers and companies are going to continue to go overseas, and they're going to find cheap labor, cheap products to put together the products so that companies can be profitable. And that's not good for employment in the U.S. Not to mention all the automation, reengineering, and all the other things that are going on that is reducing down the employee requirement anyway. I really want you to think about this. And I want you to do me a favor. Don't take sides with the employees. Don't take sides with the employers. I want you to step back for a second. And I want you to think about what the ramifications on this from this are on U.S. manufacturing. You're going to get hot about this if you're, you know, thinking one side versus the other. But I want you to think of the big picture here. This is not a good thing for the manufacturing base in the U.S. And I think it really shows up very poorly on the potential to bring manufacturing back here. Because companies are going to be very resistant to doing so if this kind of thing can happen. Meanwhile, the shelves, if this was nothing more than a publicity stunt, the shelves are being just stripped bare of all Hostess products, and now they're being sold on eBay for significant premiums. Now, my idea was just buy some Twinkies, throw them in a hole for a while. Supposedly, it can last through even a nuclear explosion because of all the preservatives. And maybe 2 years from now, sell them as collector's items. But, you know, kind of Beanie Baby thought there. But, you know, again, I just think this is really a negative situation for manufacturing. This has got to change, and we have to change our mentality on this. Shall we shift over to the Middle East for a second? This is going to be a big issue when it comes to oil prices moving forward, at least in the near future. And there's some real disturbing, I think, well, changes that we've seen because of the recent change in leadership in Egypt and the potential problems that causes and the lack of their potential agreement to stay within the Camp David agreement and the peace accord. Because right now, you know, there's a different leadership there, and there's a big question as whether they're going to back Israel in this or at least stay neutral in this whole thing. What's really interesting is, I mean, the amount of rockets that have been shipped over to Israel, I mean, sent and exploded in Israel, is really, it's very disturbing. I mean, you know, it's the I will stop if you'll stop discussion, and each side says, well, we're not starting, so you got to stop first. And they're not going to do that. Again, it's a big test of the U.S. and their commitment to Israel, as I see it, right after the presidential election. I mean, the timing was, you know, uncanny and kind of suspect at best. But this is going to be an issue that's going to be in the forefront right now because, you know, if this does, in fact, escalate, you're going to see oil prices really ripping higher from here. We have Iran with the nuclear capability potential. We have the Middle East conflict is escalating. You have possibly some further ground force, incursions going to happen from Israel moving in, which is really a bad thing for the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. You know, they do not have the army. They do not have the fighting power. And that also, just the fact of that, may cause other countries to kind of enter into the fray here. Not good. This needs to calm down immediately. This needs to come to a peace agreement again and figure out what they're going to do here because, you know, in the style of, you know, the Hamas and Israeli peace. I mean, I think it was really bad that whole shoot down and the missile attack or drone attack on the Hamas leader in the car. That whole thing's been played over and over. I don't know who's recording that and letting that stuff out. I mean, obviously it was the drone that was recording it because it comes from that angle. And I don't know why they're letting that out on the news. I mean, that's just not things we need to see. It's disturbing enough that everybody's fighting and people are getting killed, much less seeing an actual missile fired on a particular exact target and then explode the car. And what do we need to see that for? I mean, has the news gotten so crazy that everything is up for grabs? Or have we gotten so crazy that we need to see everything and we just can't keep things in, you know, in check? I don't know, but it's just disturbing. But here's the point. Oil prices, I want you to watch. I want you to keep very close attention to that because what you're going to probably see if the escalation continues is that oil prices will continue higher. But in fact, we're seeing that, you know, at the same time, supplies are also, you know, inventories are also rising because there's less gas and oil being used right now. What that means is that you have to find that inflection point after this run-up happens. And if you do, in fact, see a very quick or reasonably quick peace agreement, or at least a ceasefire agreement, that oil should just come right back down to where it was again. Keep that in mind. Now, when we go over and we start looking at what to expect for the rest of the year, again, I mentioned this earlier that we're in this quote-unquote oversold situation. Right now, as I speak, at this exact moment, you know, kind of beginning of the week, we'll see what happens moving forward. But I want you to pay close attention to some of those stocks that have been really hit hard. Oftentimes what you see is the optimism come back into the end of the year for a little bit of a rally. And, you know, you see that there are a lot of stocks that have been sold off too much. You know, it could be anything. Apple being just a good example, that have been over, you know, they're sold so much that people find bargains in them. You know, whether or not this is there for the long haul or not, in terms of a long-term trade back to 700 again, but I'm just telling you that there is optimism that comes in after the holidays. People feel merry. They feel excited about the new year. One of the big issues that will be a problem is the amount of shopping we see on Black Friday. Now, who knows what Black Friday is anymore? Because Black Friday has been split into really Black Friday. And of course, we have, you know, following Black Friday, which is a change from, let's say, I don't know, a dozen years ago, we have Cyber Monday. And a change from only 2 years ago, we have kind of like almost Black Friday, stores opening on Thursdays. So whatever the Black Friday numbers are, can we really trust what those are anyway? Now, what you'll see is, I'm telling you right now, I can't tell you how many times I've seen this, that the Black Friday numbers will come in really big by the retail associations. They will talk it up like you cannot believe. And then later, they'll come out with revisions that were much lower. It's just the game. So be aware that you're going to see the first round of Black Friday numbers that will come out be very, very encouraging, that sales have been really robust. Fact is that with all this uncertainty, even people, the heads of Walmart and all that are saying to the Congress, you know, get this thing done, because this fiscal cliff thing is hanging over everybody's head and is really going to affect the shopping cycle. Also remember that during Black Friday, stores put so many sales out there that basically their margins are next to zero. What they really need to do is pull shoppers in and get them buying not only the items that are on sale, but other items as well for the holiday. This is the biggest time of year for retailers to see sales. And this is a time of year that we have a lot of controversy, a lot of overhang, and also at the same time confusion and kind of inability for people to see what's happening in the future. So I am very concerned about this particular holiday season. I would be very encouraged to see if stores, not just the Retail Federation, the stores come out with some decent numbers and saying that shoppers are still resilient, the consumer is still there, and in U.S., man, they don't care about anything more than holidays. Because that would be a good sign that we see that, of course, 70% of the U.S. economy is based on the consumer. So, you know, if we see about 70% of all shopping being done in the next 6 weeks, I think this is an important time that we have, you know, to look at for what's going to happen moving forward. But again, you got to watch what these numbers will be, because this is a very big time of year. But I don't know, how do you feel about this whole idea that they're open on Thanksgiving now? I mean, you know, again, there's nothing sacred anymore. Even Chinese restaurants, for the most part, are closed on Thanksgiving. They don't ever close. But stores are open. They'll start at 8 o'clock at night or something like that with the sales and all. And now you have Thanksgiving and you get to leave instead of going home and kind of spend time with your family, you get to go shopping. There's a lot of talk out there that people are very mad that the stores are now taking profits over family. That's a consideration. You know, you wonder how many people are just going to say, hey, you know what? I'm not doing it. I'll go Friday, not going Thursday. But now store after store is actually opening up early. And they're going to have, who knows, by next year it could be on Columbus Day that Black Friday starts. But I would put dollars down that this is another record year for Cyber Monday. It's become not only easier, but the infiltration, in a good way, of internet and the ease of use of the internet in houses around the world and the U.S., by all ages, has become something that is going to ramp up sales on the online sites. And I think we're going to see another record report out of the Cyber Monday, and not only that, the whole season for trade, you know, for buying and numbers that come off the online sites, which again are probably going to affect a little bit of the Black Friday and the retail brick and mortar stores throughout the end of the year. We already saw last week that Walmart came out with a, you know, they didn't meet their numbers at all, and stock dropped 3-4% or something on that, and we saw Sears just get obliterated. Too much excitement in that before that came out, about 18% or so. Dell once again sank to a, you know, multi-year low. Hewlett Packard's getting creamed. You know, so what we're seeing is that it could be the start of a consumer slowdown. I'm not going to say retrenchment, but yet at the same time, the last several months, we've seen consumer sentiment in the form of the Michigan index, the University of Michigan confidence reading, and also the conference board ticking higher. So there's kind of a weird, you know, are people doing what they're saying or what's happening? You know, they're confident, but they're not spending, and it should be working hand in hand. So the things that we need to look at and kind of clarify this and to sum it up, the things that we need to look at for year end, what's happening with not only Black Friday, but the sales, the fiscal cliff discussion, the, you know, what's happening in the Middle East and the escalation there, oil prices, the blathering that we're going to hear from Congress people about, you know, the fiscal cliff being, you know, very close to being solved versus, well, we'll see what happens. These are all the things that you need to be paying attention to. And when you're looking at things that are oversold, jump into some of the opportunities if they present themselves, and also take profits on things that are overbought. Energy drink companies, watch them. And of course, the 3D companies, 3D printing companies, that is, that, you know, I think there's going to be some interesting play next week on that. So that kind of gives you a little bit of a what to look for if you're writing this down and kind of penciling a few things into what to look for through the end of the year. And then at the beginning of the year, we have to look at how much of a drag we're really going to see on GDP, because this whole fiscal cliff thing was not solved. And by the way, like I said, no matter what happens, there is no solution that actually adds back to GDP. You don't get a bump in GDP from anything that can possibly be done on the fiscal cliff. Just a fact. Just the way it is. A couple things of note I just want to mention to you. We're coming out, you know, trigger point alerts, by the way. Right now we deal with stocks. Commodities are coming out. If you want to trade futures and commodities, that's coming out very, very soon. And this key reversal indicator, which is part of a bigger program, which deals with a ETF portfolio. For those of you that don't like to trade stocks on a wild basis, or, you know, short stocks, buy in, buy out, if you want more of a core portfolio of about 6 or 7 different ETFs that cover the range of possibilities from commodities to domestic markets, international markets, we are actually going to be putting that up for a subscription as well on triggerpointresearch.com. So something exciting to look for the end of the year, okay? Also, next week, we're going to be having the fourth quarter economic commentary that we wrote for clients at the beginning of the quarter. We're going to have that up for you. You can download that over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Make sure that you do that. And the other thing that you can do if you want, you can follow The Disciplined Investor, everything that we write, on a daily basis. Get a summary of all of it daily right to your email box. Just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, top right. Just fill in your name and your email. And starting the next day, you'll start getting an email summary compilation of what we wrote and what we talked about. Of course, you could follow us over on Twitter as well at Andrew Horowitz. And I don't know. It's about all I have to say right now. I will tell you that I went flying a model airplane with my son this weekend, and he was learning. He's 17. He's got this really cool plane he bought, and he was flying it, taking a lesson, and I'm watching it, and it was great. And he's on his third flight, and some idiot just couldn't control their plane, smashed right into them, mid-air collision, and that's it. Done. Plane is toast. Now we got to start from square one, patch it back up, or buy another body. And the engine was intact, good news, but what a bummer. Should have seen his face. He was all excited about flying it. He took over the controls. He was doing his thing. He was doing flips, doing his, you know, working the whole thing. He's going to practice a landing, and right before he could do that, some plane just comes out of nowhere, bam, smashes right into him. I guess that's part of the game. You know, if you're going to be doing that kind of a hobby, it's part of the game. Anyway, thank you for joining me, and I wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. We have a short show for a short week. Thanks for all the things that you've been writing me, and I appreciate it. Thanks for your comments on iTunes as well. Until next week, Andrew Horowitz saying have a happy Thanksgiving and a great start to your holiday season. Bye-bye.
Investor podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.